Good afternoon, everyone. We will go ahead and get started with the CORE MPO Technical Coordinating Committee. Thanks so much for joining us today on August 1st. We will start with approving the agenda. And get a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved, Michelle Strickland, City of Savannah.
Second, Kayla Brown, Bike Walk Savannah.
Thanks, and we'll start the voting to my right.
Means yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Sanati, yes.
Panisati, yes.
Katie Proctor, yes.
Goldbronson, yes.
Oh. Was that Callahan? Online?
No, Pete, I'm tidy.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, Brooks, yes. Thank you. And then we'll go through our action items. Up first, we have approving the meeting minutes for the June meeting.
Motion to approve, Moskowitz.
Second, Strickland.
Thank you. We'll start the vote to the left for approving the minutes.
Yes.
It's the button on the right.
Okay, sorry. Katie, yes.
Danisati, yes.
Sanati, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Brown, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Means, yes.
Brooks, yes. All right, and then we'll go into our next item, adoption of Moving Forward Together 2050 Metropolitan Transportation Plan.
I will give the presentation. This is a two-year process, so we are finally at the end of it. Hopefully we will adopt the plan next week, so we will ask the TCC for endorsement. So I will just talk about okay, so we're at the final stage. So we will try to adopt the financially constrained plan. And in terms of public involvement, we are also at the last stage. We started the first round 2 years ago, and then second round last year, and then the third round this summer. Basically, we went outside to get people's input on the financially constrained project list. So actually, we didn't get that many comments from the public about the project list. They are more focused on completing the projects already under construction, like I-16 widening. And then they also have questions on like sidewalk and pedestrian trails without lighting, drainage problems, but in terms of financial constraint plan project list, they really didn't have that many comments. So we actually not only hosting the public events, public meetings ourselves, and then we go to the neighborhoods and we go to the events and then collect the input, as you can see some of the pictures. And so this is all girls and girl power. So we got a lot of input, and then we also have a comment box. And then we have index cards, so people make comments. We just write those down. So we are compiling the comment file. The current version is not final version. So because the comments are still coming in, so you can see the comment file attached to this TCC agenda. Those are the comments that we have received so far. Not received so far. Received to a certain point, because some of the comments that came in email haven't been included in those yet. So that's a work in progress. So if you remember that during when we kicked off the plan update, we also had a survey. We have a survey, and we have a map survey. So the survey was translated into four different languages: English, Spanish, Chinese, and Vietnamese. And so far, we got 570 responses. And recently, we were still receiving responses on because the survey is still open until August 7th. Last year is like one response a day, two responses a day, and this year is like 12 9, 5. So it's that, yeah, for some reason, people were just sending more responses. So, for the survey responses, we got more than, almost 600. And then also, we have the map survey. People can just pinpoint where problems, errors are or make recommendations. So we have more than 160 map survey responses. And then we also, besides the public meetings, we also go to different communities and neighborhoods and make speaking, making presentations, you can see. So we have a lot of speaking opportunities as well. So these are some of the examples that we collect from the specific comments. A lot of people want bicycle pedestrian projects, and that's no surprise. Because there are a lot of bicycle and pedestrian use, and everybody is a pedestrian basically, and there are also a lot of bicycle users, and they find problems, so they want a better system. And this high-speed train between Atlanta and Savannah is not just one person; several person actually wanted that. So several people commented on that. Even at the Forsyth Farmers Market, the people were asking for, oh, "We need a high-speed train because who wants to drive in Atlanta, right?" Besides Kenise. Okay, and people also want the traffic calming on certain streets like 52nd Street, and people were speeding or detour. So this actually aligns with the Vision Zero plans. So we will work with our member agencies to get these fixed. And also the price of street, people were speeding, even if we have the bike lane, you have like a wider bike lanes, but people still don't feel safe because the cars actually move to the bike lane. And also the other one, because of a lot of developments of Hyundai and the freight, a lot of development in on the west side and the south side, like Richmond Hill, Effingham County, Port Wentworth, Garden City, Fuller. So we actually have a lot of development over there. And also, this is another comments on the bike lane. So these are just the samples that we collected, and we are still compiling that big file. Just want to let you know. Since the last TCC meeting, we actually made some updates, but we also got further input at the Corn Pill board meeting last June as well. So these updates over here is basically the updates after the last board meeting. Because at the TCC, remember you recommended removing the I-95 widening project, get rid of Gulfstream Road widening project and adding Old River Road. So those were already presented to the Corn Pill Board at the June meeting. But since that, there are more comments that we received. So we made some updates. One is we finally got the Port of Savannah Renewable Fuel Project final cost. Because previously we know that they got $7.5 million federal grant, and then they required 20% match. Including that, it's like $9.75 million. But FHWA says you need to include the total project cost. The strange thing is FHWA doesn't want to share with us the application, so we don't have the final project cost. So we have to contact the GPA as the original applicant. But unfortunately, the grant writer who was responsible for this grant resigned. So they got a new grant writer. So we have to waited for a long time. Finally, this new grant writer was able to find the information for us. So the total project cost is like $36 million for this project. And then also in July, CAT received some grant funds, and then CAT divided the grant funds into three projects. One is for the bus replacement, this Gillick zero emission buses. And then another one is for infrastructure and the depot charging. And then the third project CAT wants to do is for workforce development. But we, because the 25th MTP is a capital improvements project, so we don't consider the transit operation as part of the plan. So we didn't include the workforce development. So we included the other two projects. So those are the two revenue updates that we got. And the project updates, besides what TCC has already recommended, and so for those of you who attended the Corn Pill board meeting, you know that President Street project was a big topic. And some of the board members want us to do the re-ranking of that project. Because previously, when we did the priority project ranking and prioritization, the the ranking or score for that project was based on the previous, the GDOT project. So it was all ramp reconstruction. So it didn't have transit scores and didn't have bicycle and pedestrian scores. So I know City of Savannah wanted us to rescore this project, but I would request that whoever makes the request to please be more helpful, like what Deanna did. Just forward us the concept and forward us the layout so that we know we have something to rely on. So eventually, the project, the street, present street project that we included in the 2050 is based on the revised concept that Chatham County was able to forward us because they are doing the study right now. So it's based on one of those concepts that has the transit connection and bicycle and pedestrian connection. So based on the rescore, that project actually boosted by at least 50 points. So now it's like, ranked at number 3. Besides still at 21, the two projects are still ranked number 1, 2, and President Street ranked number 3, because of those new considerations. And then, that means this project has to be moved to cost band 2. And that means there will be a lot of shifting around, for the revenue distribution for other projects. So the financially constrained plan has been rebalanced just because of this change, because of the domino effects. And then also for the document updates, because I actually attached the revised 2050 MTP draft full document. It's almost 200 pages to the TCC agenda for that one. So most of the changes were made were actually in chapter 6. So, the highway and transit revenue projections, just based on I talked about, those tables have been updated. And then the highway and transit fiscally constrained plans have been updated because of those as well. And then we also added a highway project map because when we started the public comment period, our map was not ready yet. So now we have the draft map. So the draft map was inserted into the revised draft document. And then we also added the system performance report because the 2045 MTP is the first PVPP compliant long range plan that we had. This is the second one. So we have to make sure that all the projects contribute to the federal performance measures. And then we also addressed some comments like in our draft, we will see the GPA, the project is funded by grant, but the GLA project is also funded by grant, but actually it's like a new NEVI formula program. It's not grant. So we actually cracked some of that information. And other updates also, like for the third round of public involvement, we actually had 12 or 10 events so far. So that has been updated. Aisha has updated that section. But this meeting is still a public meeting. And next Wednesday, we're going to have a public hearing. So that will be updated in the financial plan in the draft plan as well. Okay, this is the revised highway project revenues. Basically, it's just the cost band one. It only impacts the cost band one, and it's only impacts actually. Even if you have additional revenues, that revenues can only be used for the GPA project. So really, it doesn't impact all the other projects, but the total numbers change. It used to be $1.89 billion, now it's $1.91 billion, so you can see. And we still have the operational improvement set aside, non-motorized set aside, transit project set aside, and then maintenance set aside. And then one of the comments we received from the public is that our maintenance revenue is too low, based on the like 20-year life cycle of roadways. But we haven't provided responses yet, but it's like this is mostly for highway, major highway projects, like not for the local roads, because every jurisdiction actually received the MIG funds to help you to do the maintenance. And a lot of local money also goes towards the maintenance, and this doesn't include all of that revenues. And this is our draft plan project list. So you can see a lot of the projects. These are big capacity projects. So many of those projects in the pipeline, like I-516, widening project Durain already included, but you will see a lot of developments on the west side. That's because of the freight development, the crazy freight development over here in our area. So I'm just going through this, just to give you a list. So these are the pipeline projects from Chatham County and the municipalities. Project Drain, definitely. I hope these get off the plan pretty soon so they don't have to move on to the next plan. So we hope that the plan can be implemented, the project can be implemented in the next 5 years. And the US 17 Back River and US 17 Widening and the Savannah River Crossing, that's the right-of-way phase that GDOT was doing. And then I-95 ITS project and also the other two projects, the long-time projects, US 80 bridges replacements at Bull River and Les Strata Creek. So hopefully they will get off my table soon. And another one in the pipeline is I-16 at State Route 17, basically the I-16 interchange at Little Neck Road. And this project is already in the tip. So Chatham County is doing it. And then another one that we have is I-95 at Airways Avenue, and this is the Savannah Airport Commission project. For the cost estimate for this one, actually the 2045 plan, we actually used the Divergent Diamond for the cost estimating, but we actually got input from I was talking to Jim after the last TCC meeting. They actually want the flyover option. So for this plan, the cost estimate is based on the flyover. And then, of course, there were several, three Effingham County projects that are currently in the STIP because Effingham County is in our expanded boundary. And these three projects are now inside the MPO boundary, CornPO boundary. So these, all three projects are either bridge rehab or bridge replacement. And then these would be the projects with newly available funds, like City of Savannah's I-16 extra ramp removal. They call the Reconnecting Communities and Neighborhoods Program funds. And then the Volterra got the $7.8 million from FHWA. And then the port got that charging project over there. And then the formula program, the NEVI, GDOT is trying to do the charging station on I-16 between Chatham Parkway and the Gwinnett Street. And some of the longer-term projects that are carried forward from 2045 because they are still ranked very high on our prioritization list. Like I-95 at the State Route 21, interchange reconstruction, because the short-term fix for the Divergent Diamond, it seems like it's already at capacity. So we do need the reconstruction. And the President Street, is carried forward from 2045 MTP, but it was a different concept, as I mentioned, this project already. And the I-516 widening project, and then interchange reconstruction at I-16. And then I-16 widening from Pooler to I-95 and the Old River Road widening. That's the request from the Chatham County at the last TCC meeting. And this, basically the 2050 MTP might be the first one that we were able to add more new projects because of several years ago when the federal government started to implement a year of expenditure. So the plan update will focus on cutting projects out because of the if you inflate the cost, the revenue is not enough to cover that. And this time, we actually were able to add more new projects just because I think fortunately, GDOT came up with some additional money for Ogeechee Road widening, Effingham Parkway widening, Brampton Road connector. And that really helped. So those projects are off the list. I-16 widening and I-16 at I-95 interchange. So those are like millions of dollars projects, worth of projects already off the list. So that means more revenues will be available for some new projects. And then we went through the TCC actually guided us for the project selection. Remember we have the big matrix and we have the project prioritization as a result of that. So the highest top priority projects were included in this longer term project. So new projects include State Route 21 widening from 30 to McCall Road, and then the second one from McCall Road to 9th Street in Rincon. And I was very, very happy to learn that seems like GDOT is trying to implement this project and already trying to secure a contractor or consultant to start development process. I said, what a surprise. That is our number two and number one. So it seems like our prioritization process really works. So I'm very glad about that. And the Fort Augur Road ranked pretty high, US 80 widening. And then the grid separation on 307, that is from the State Route 307 corridor study and free plan congestion management process. And then for geographic equity, we actually also included a Belfast Road widening project in Richmond Hill and Bryan County. That's because so far, geographic-wise, in expanded area, no project was identified. Actually, two projects were identified for Bryan County and Richmond Hill. One is Port Royal Road widening. Another one is Harris Trail Road widening. But I did check the functional classification. Those are classified as local roadways. So we are mostly talking about federal dollars. So actually I had an individual meeting with Richmond Hill, explained to them. So how do we proceed with this? And they are okay with including the, Belfast Keller Road project in there. And then in October, we are going to work with them to up-classify, to request up-classification for three roadways in, Bryan County and Richmond Hill. So making them eligible for federal dollars. I mean, City of Savannah, you still want, if you want, still want to submit that Benton Boulevard for consideration, we will do that. Also coordinating with Thunderbolt because they have several roadways that they want to up-classify as well. And for the transit projects, basically we just added the zero emission buses and those two new grants and infrastructure and depot charging. And then since we did some amendments in June, so the preventative maintenance increased, had a little bit of cost increase. So we included that as well. So this is the financially constrained transit plan. The major part that FHW actually sent us an email is that so if you don't have the system performance report, TCC cannot endorse this long-range transportation plan. So we were already working on the system performance report. We're just waiting for the final numbers to be completed. So this is just an example to show you. We actually did the check for the performance measures for all of the projects included in the 2050 MTP, including the set-asides. So that's included in the revised draft, and I will just go over later. But this is just a sample to show you how do we correlate the 2050 projects with the performance measures. So we do this check, and we calculate how much investments are contributing to highway safety, how much are contributing to congestion relief. So this is the system performance report over here. As you can see, the transit share, the transit mode in our area, actually, I'm not sure. I think it's 5% or something. But actually the investment that we have is almost 15% for transit. And because we also allocate some federal highway money to help transit improvements as well. And the highway is 85% of the total revenues we have. But the highway also includes the bicycle and pedestrians. So I just want to make sure that those are considered. But if you check this is the summation of all the projects. So at least 93% of the projects contributed to improving safety. And another big thing is a lot of the projects, including transit improvements, are also helped to relieve congestion. So 90%. And then a lot of the freight projects, actually a lot of the projects have because of freight development. So 77% of the project actually contribute to freight. Because we already have some, a lot of the bridges in our area already meet the sufficiency rating. So actually we don't have that many bridge projects. So this time, we only have like 32% of the project that contribute to bridge and pavement. And transit, bike pad, and operational improvements all contribute to air quality. So about 44% of the revenues contribute to air quality. And then the transit safety, this is about 30%, and transit asset management is 14%. So this is the system performance report. We will have a public hearing next Wednesday. But I just want to just go back and show you some information that I have over here. especially one of those is like project selection and prioritization comparison, because this is the document that has resulted from that Quorum Peel board meeting. Because of that precedent street, they want us to compare how we do project selection, how we do project prioritization between 2045 and 2050. And this one is documented. All of the information is documented over here. So just want to show you this in report that is available. And another report that has been updated, like I mentioned, is the revised draft. So most of the changes, most of the updates so far have been focusing on section 6, which is the basically constrained financial plan section. So just to go over this very, very fast. So this is a very, very big document. So when FHWA said you cannot, TCC cannot endorse this plan, I thought they want us to complete this plan, complete this document. So I freaked out basically. And then they said, no, you just need to do the performance report and make sure they update all the financial tables, because it will take us probably at least 2 months just to revise this document. So I'm just going to focus on the changes. Okay, these are the like third round of public involvement that Asia has already entered this information, updated this information. So section 6 is the financial plan and the project recommendations. As you can see, so we separated the grant funds with the new formula funds. As you can see, I actually, when I make changes, I just highlighted all of these, as you can see where the changes are. And this is the updated financial table, because of that GPA project. So we added more than $30 million. So that's actually impact this over here, 2025. And then this is the category table. So you can see the total is now $1.9 billion over here. So this is the updated revenue table. And the project cost estimates. We actually added the GPA project. The total is almost $37 million. So instead of $9 million, and also separated the grant funds with the new formula funds. And this is the revised financially constrained plan. As you can see, the cost band one actually didn't change much because all these are pipeline projects. We already got the confirmation about their cost estimates either from TIP or either from the project manager, the GDOT project managers, or from the TPRO. So the only difference is the President Street now is in cost band two. And because including this project, because of inclusion of this project into cost band two, so many of the, because I have to do the rebalancing. So you can see there are some balancing updates for this financially constrained plan. And the set asides didn't change. So this is the updated financially constrained plan. We also added this map, as I mentioned, because when we had the draft out for public review, we didn't have that. And for the transit revenues, I actually added in, for the transit revenues, added in the grant, new grant funds, the CAT received, and also explained we only included the infrastructure related projects, not the workforce development. So explained over here. And then this is the updated transit revenue table. So basically over here, so it was like $25 million. Now it's $34 million because we got with the federal grant with CAT local match is about $9 million. And then this is the balanced transit capital improvement projects. And then the system performance report, as I mentioned, we did the correlation between the projects, between the 2050 projects and then the performance measures. And you can see on this table, I showed you in that presentation that was a sample. But if you can see in this table, actually all of these projects, highway projects, transit projects, including set asides, are all listed over here and correlated to the performance measures. And then this is the table that I showed you in that presentation file. It shows how much is contributing to which performance measures. So overall, the 2050 MTP really contributes to the economic development of the Kuala Lumpur region. Our vision plan project list, we have the project list, but I still need to like do double checking and validation of costs and validation of no repetition. So we're still working on this one, but it will be included as an appendix. So that's basically all the updates that we have made so far. We are going to keep on making, finalizing this big document based on input and based on editing. So a lot of edits have to be done. But right now, at least we have this financially constrained plan and we have the system performance report. So we will ask the TCC to endorse adoption of this 2050 MTP so we can adopt the plan on August the 7th. That means no federal dollars will stop. So we don't delay any project development. Any questions?
I have one. For the performance measures, what is the pavement and bridges category? How's that defined?
Well, we will see mostly because for the in our freight plan development process, we actually have like pavement condition evaluation. So the majority of the highway network in our area have good pavement conditions. But most of the problems are with local roads. So really it doesn't impact 2050 MTP that much for the pavement. So that category, most of the projects that contributed to that are actually bridge projects like US 80 bridges at US, Bull River, Las Rata Creek. So bridge, you're making bridge replacement because the pavement and bridge are in one category. So even if you're not contributing to pavement, you're making contributions to bridges. So if we need to refine this, we can. I mean, if you think like certain projects, it can make improvements to pavement, we can do that. But so far, we found out the collectors above the pavement conditions okay. It's they meet the sufficient readings.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I just saw Girard and Chavez, and those both need pavement. We're making pavement improvements on those, so that's the reason I asked. But
yeah, Girard and Chavez Road, because they are sidewalk projects, so we are
looking at the pedestrian improvement.
Yeah, yeah. So they are actually making contributions to safety. I mean, yeah, definitely highway, pedestrian, sidewalk safety, and also air quality. Because if people take more bike and walking, so you will reduce the air pollution. Yeah, that's how we do the correlation over here. Any more questions?
I guess I do have another one. The scoring, did you actually release the scoring? Is that part of the draft report as it was last time?
Or the scoring will be included in the appendix eventually. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We haven't posted that yet. Okay. Yeah. We got scores, but mostly just the President Street that got rescored. Yeah, but we do have the updated file. We just haven't posted yet.
Anything else?
I have one real quick. You say that this is going to have some changes, right? So this is not the final document yet?
Yeah, because we are still receiving comments. So we have to address all of the comments. So if you can just, if I just go back, you can see this comment file. So we documented these are the FHWA comments. And then there are also GDOT comments, and then we also received the public comments. So actually, yeah, Genesis was working on this file, so she actually separated them out. So the comments we received at the Foresight Market at the July 25th meetings. We also have emails received after meetings, so that hasn't been incorporated, not included. So we have to review every of this comment and then make changes to the document to make sure the document reflects what people want.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Waikato, this is Joe Longo, Federal Highway.
Hi, Joe.
Thank you for including that system performance report and the other changes we discussed. I did want to ask if the prioritization matrix, like the appendix you mentioned, will that be available to the TCC and the board members before the adoption date?
We can post that. Like I told you, I was working until midnight the day before. And how many of you have your boss call you at 10:30 at night to ask you how you're doing? So Melanie called me about 10:30 while I was still working on it. So yeah, so we were in a rush to post everything, but it's just we might miss something. But if you want us to repost the scoring, yeah, we can post that. Yeah, definitely, because we do have the scores right now.
I do recommend sharing that, at least via email or on the website, you know, so that the TCC can take a look, especially before that board meeting, because again, that was the area of contention. So definitely something to get everyone's eyes on before the adoption.
Yeah, the President Street scoring, I can probably share with you. I mean, even if you, let me just bring it up over here.
Thank you.
Prioritization. So basically, this President Street, actually the needs part didn't change, and the resiliency part is already got the highest score of all the projects. So it's the equity part that got scores, because previously it got zero. That's President Street. Oh, okay, maybe this is not the right file, but I would look at the right file because we did add the equity scores. So the total score for that one is actually 110. So let me just go back to this because I documented that in the comparison file. But we will share that information with the TCC. We will probably, let me see, where's the comparison file? Okay. So the last page of this, because we use the President Street as the like guinea pig for this. So you can see adding the equity scores, the total score for this one is actually 110. So, but we will definitely make sure that we post this revised prioritization file to the TCC agenda and also send to all the TCC members of this meeting. So, but
great.
If you want
thank
to,
you for that.
Yeah, if you want to check, it's actually documented in this one, and also why it's ranked different because of the concept. Yeah, concept the change. So just want to make sure that we have that information.
Thanks so much. Any other questions? Can we get a motion to endorse the draft 2050 MTP?
So moved, Strickland.
Second, Kayla Brown.
We'll start the voting to the right.
Mains, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Senati, yes.
Danisetti, yes.
Kenny Potter, yes.
Candler, yes.
Brooks, yes. Thank you. Up next, we've got our TIP amendments for August.
Good afternoon, everyone. I will be giving the TIP amendment report. So we received several TIP amendment requests, and I'll just push through this as quickly as possible. In terms of the public involvement period, the comment period started on July 24th, and it ends on August 7th at the current PO board meeting. So far, we have not received public comment on this TIP amendment. So in terms of the actual TIP amendments, we have 8 this time, so this is pretty heavy TIP amendment period, and I'll just push through and go to the project pages that have the information. Okay, so we received a TIP amendment request for I-16 at Montgomery Street at MLK Boulevard, ramp and overpass. This is the original project page, and now this is the updated project page. So what changed was the City of Savannah requested $2.25 million be amended into the preliminary engineering phase in fiscal year 2025. So that resulted in a total project cost of $3 million, with the federal portion being $2.5 million and the local cost being $630,000. So the next TIP amendment was for the Volterra Electrification of American Ports, Reduction of Truck Emissions. So this is a brand new project being added to the TIP. So Volterra Power received grant funds of $7.8 million to implement and will provide a local match. The required local 20% local match is $1.95 million, and the total project cost is $9.75 million. The grant funds need to be included in the Core MPO's 2050 MTP and the 2024 to 2027 TIP before Volterra Power can access them. So those EPF funds resulted in a total project cost of $9.75 million, with $7.8 million being the federal portion and $1.95 million being the local cost. For the Port of Savannah Renewable Fuel Project, GPA received $7.5 million from the Reduction of Truck Emissions at Port Facilities Grant Program Fund and will provide a local match. The 20% local match is $1.875 million, and the total cost of this project is $9.375 million. And then these grant funds also need to be included in the 2050 MTP and the current TIP before GPA can access them. For the Gwinnett Street, I-16 from Gwinnett Street to Chatham County NEVI Charging Station. In June 2024, GDOT requested to amend NEVI funds into the fiscal year 2024 to 2027 TIP. The funding is $1 million in federal funding and $250,000 in state funding. And in total, it is $1,250,000 in the project cost. So the federal portion is $1 million and the local cost, or that should be state cost actually. The state cost is $250,000. So we also received a TIP amendment for the Stillwell Road at Ebenezer Creek. So this amendment proposes to move this project from the STIP into the 2024 to 2027 TIP. The total project cost from fiscal year 2024 to 2027 is $7.8385 million. The federal cost is $5,868,000, and the state cost is $1,467,000, and the local cost is $50,000. And so here is all of that laid out in this table here. We also received a TIP amendment for CR 307/Longbridge Road at Ebenezer Creek. So the amendment proposes to move this project from the STIP into the fiscal year 2024 to 2027 TIP. The total project costs from fiscal year 2024 to 2027 is $500,000. Of that, the federal portion of that is $400,000, and the state portion is $100,000. And there were also there was also a TIP amendment for I-95 at Savannah River at the South Carolina line. The amendment proposes to move this project from STIP into the 2024 to 2027 TIP. The total project cost within the 2024 to 2027 fiscal years is $17,160,000. Of that, the federal portion is $13,728,000, and the state cost is $3,432,000. And then we also received a TIP amendment for Chatham Area Transit's low or no emission grant funds. And so this is adding this grant specifically is $704,800. So Chatham Area Transit will provide the local match, and that is $1,814,960. And then the federal portion of that is about 81%, and that is $7,900,000. These are the public involvement materials. And we also did an MTP TIP consistency check. So all of these proposed projects for this TIP amendment are included in the Core MPO's 2050 Metropolitan Transportation Plan. And then it's just coordination and then the resolution. Are there any questions on that TIP amendment?
Hey, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, this is Vivian. I'm the GDOT planning. I want to clarify that the Navy project, it's the match is not a state, it's other.
Okay. Yeah, the match for the Navy is not state, it's other. Okay. Another comment that I want to make is the GPA project we just talked about is the total cost is $36 million. It's not $9 million. So we need to reflect that in the tip. As you actually noticed that many of these new projects, we just added those in the 2050 MTP. So we cannot adopt the tip amendments until we adopt the MTP, 2050 MTP. So these are new projects.
Yeah.
So that was $36 million.
Yeah, and we thank you because we know that you guys were busy, so we thank you for trying to process all this. I just want to clarify because it's just a critical, you know, something very easy to fix. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on this? So are we asking for endorsement today or do we need to wait?
Endorsement.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can I get a motion?
Brown, I'll make a motion to endorse.
Moskowitz, second.
Start the voting to the left.
Candler, yes.
Proctor, yes.
Canisati, yes.
Senator, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Brown, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Mains, yes.
Brooks, yes. Thank you, Asia. Up next, we've got the 2025 UPWP amendment.
Okay, we adopted the 2025 UPWP in February. In that UPWP, we actually added some unfunded studies so that when we it's time for us to apply for discretionary PL funds and we can say that we're consistent. We are actually applying for discretionary PL funds for three projects, for three studies. In July, we actually worked with the project sponsors and then tried to fine tune the scopes and cost estimates. So we do have some updates. So before we submit the grant application, we want to make sure the UPWP is updated. And so the grant application will be consistent with the UPWP. So I'm just going to open up this report. As you can see, we are going to apply for funds for three studies. The first one, is the urban flooding model phase two. Remember the phase one covering the previous Corn Peel boundary, that is Chatham County and Richmond Hill and the tiny portions of Effingham County. But now we expanded the boundary to southern Effingham County and more areas in Bryan County. So we're going to expand this urban flooding model into those areas. And then the second part that we want to add, revise the scope, is also because we want to have like a training program. So the consultants can develop all those models, but we want them to train the local users. Actually, Melanie went to meet with Pooler and they were very interested in using the urban flooding model outputs that we have, but they need to learn how to use that model, so how to use that data. So actually for this phase two, we actually want a training course for our members. So the study is not wasted. Information can be useful to our members. And the scope was just including that, expand the boundary and then include the training. The cost hasn't changed. It's still about $150,000 and we are going to request $120,000 and the local match will be coming from MPO membership dues and $30,000. The second one, Effingham County wants to do the USAID scoping study because we complete the first phase, which covers county line all the way to I-560. And this, because at that time, Effingham County was not part of us and now Effingham County is part of us. So this phase two will cover the segments within Effingham County. So we just made a little bit of clarification over here. Major update for this one is actually the cost estimate. Previously, we estimated it would be about $122,000. And by further evaluation, we decided that it will be probably $270,000. So we're going to apply for $260,000. And then Effingham County will provide the local match of $54,000. And then the last one, the bicycle and pedestrian facility study, we actually had discussions with some consultants, so they helped us. So we want to do an inventory of all the bicycle and pedestrian network in our area. So we want to find out the conditions of those facilities, and we also want to develop some kind of a database to track. I think Kayla might be better versed than me. Kayla and Asia were majorly responsible for developing this study, the scope, and the cost estimates, with some assistance with our consultant, with one of our consultants over here. And then I think another one is for, so if we, like say Port Wentworth has a new subdivision and then they add some sidewalks, so we want to have some kind of mechanism for us to add that in the database and to track all that. So we actually had our first BIPAC, Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee meeting this week. And so we were still waiting for like a little bit input from BIPAC. So far we haven't received it because the deadline for the application is August 22nd. So we want to like finalize this before that time. But if we receive any input from BIPAC. So revised the scope, you can see a lot of revision to the previous scope. And then the major update and is also in the cost estimate. So we're estimating this project will be about $300,000 and we will request $240,000. And then the core MPO membership dues will cover the local match about $60,000. So we have to be amending the UPWP and then also get the resolutions ready, get all the grant application materials ready before we can submit that. This is for the UPWP amendment part. Any questions?
So I don't have a question, but just a comment for the bike ped study. We, CAT, recently completed our bus stop inventory, which includes a field on connectivity to existing sidewalk network or lack of presence thereof. So I'm happy to share that with
you. Okay, great. Yeah. Great. So we can incorporate the language probably in here somewhere to see we already probably do the inventory of existing data. Yeah, because the CAT already has some information. But the boundary for this study is actually three county. So it will be no Chatham County is probably covered.
I just got Chatham.
Yeah. But Effingham, we don't have anything. Bryan County, we don't have anything, but we will add that language in here.
I also had a comment. Going through this, I noticed that it's specific to using satellite imagery for the data collection in some places, and I just thought maybe to remove that so that when you go for your RFP, you know, folks can suggest other methods and not limit the scope of the project so much.
Okay. Remove satellite imagery.
Yeah, using that via satellite imagery in some places for the bike ped information collection. So
it says you want like all kinds of methods. Yeah, combination of methods.
Yeah.
Okay, not be restricted to that. Mm-hmm. Okay, will be revised. Any more questions on this? Okay, if not, we will request the TCC to endorse the UPW amendments subject to those two changes.
I make a motion to approve, Senati.
Brown, second.
We'll start to the right.
Mains, yes.
Moskowitz, yes. Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Senati, yes.
Kanisati, yes.
Hooker, yes.
Candler, yes.
Brooks, yes.
Thank you.
And then the next item is review and discussion of the proposed studies.
Yes. This is the application. We have already prepared the application for the three studies. And this is the US 80 application material that we have prepared. The scope is consistent with the UPWP. The cost over here is consistent with the UPWP. And we have a study map. And then we have the resolution. So the resolution included the actual how much money we are going to request and the local match that is available. And then Effingham County also provided this local match confirmation letter. So this is for the US 80 corridor study. And then for the urban flooding model study, the scope language is consistent with the UPWP. And the project is consistent. And the study area, you can see it expanded. For the phase two analysis, probably will be this newly expanded areas, but for the training modules, that would be for the whole area, for the whole region. And then we also have the resolution ready to be signed by the Cornfield board chairman. So it's also including like how much money we're going to request and the local match. And here's the local match availability letter. And for the bike and pedestrian, we will revise the scope over here just based on the two comments you just mentioned. CAD already has some inventory data of conditions and within Chatham County. We will add that in information and then don't be restrictive to satellite imagery for data collection. So we will revise the language based on your input a moment ago before we submit the application and then submit this for a CONPIL board. So as you can see, the cost is listed over here, and this is the boundary for the study, and then this is the local support letter, and then this is the resolution that is ready to go. Any more questions or discussions on these three? We would just ask the TCC to just endorse, and we forward this to the Cornfield Board for their consideration. After we got the chairman's signatures, we will submit this to GDOT.
Mains, I motion to endorse.
A second, Senati.
All right, we'll start the vote to the right.
Mains, yes.
Moskowitz, yes. Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Senati, yes.
Danisetti, yes.
Proctor, yes.
Candler, yes.
Brooks, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Moving on to other business, call for plans and studies for fiscal year 2026 UPWP.
We are going to, we are in fiscal year 2025, early part of fiscal year 2025, but we need to start to consider the 2025 UPWP because we will adopt the UPWP, in February of next year. So we want to start the call for plans and studies process, just like we talked about these three studies. They actually went through three rounds of discussions already. And this is, I don't know, the fourth round discussion before we submit applications. So for any new plans and studies you want to propose for fiscal year 2026, they will be included in the unfunded section. When I had the individual meeting with Richmond Hill, they actually already talked about probably having corridor study on State Road 144. So we will probably, the deadline for this is September 30th of this year because we will start the UPWP development in October. And November. So if you have some ideas, so just don't even if you don't have the complete information, make sure you get your step in the door, right? So just if you have some proposals, some ideas that they want to pursue, so make sure that we have at least two rounds of discussions by the TCC, and then we will include them in the unfunded section, and you can refine the scopes and cost estimates before you grant application. So far, I already got the idea that Richmond Hill wants to pursue the State Road 144 corridor study, but they are still trying to understand the MPO planning process and how this process works. So I know that is one. And some of the unfunded studies currently in the 2025 UPWP, so they will still be probably carried forward if they still need it. And we can think about the next round, like March grant application, and then we will revise at that time. So this is the time if you have anything that you want to include. So this is the time. Just want to let you know.
If we already have an unfunded study, but maybe we need to modify the scope, can we do
that?
Okay.
Yes, we can do that. Yes.
All right. Any other questions? Next, status reports, federal certification review.
We actually have a website, dedicated website already established for the federal certification review. FHWA, FTA, they already are doing the desk review. So this is our certification review website, and thanks to Hint. Hint is a tremendous help to us because every time we do web posting, he's tremendous help. And he also helped us on posting all of this information Now they are doing the desk review. They can just click on all these bubbles and then get to the documents. And then the site visit is on October 29th and October the 30th. And probably the first day we will have a public meeting. We were still trying to decide, because they decided that, FHWA suggested that this is government building. It might be very forbidding to people. So this is just a library. We will explore different options, for the public meeting. But for now, we list this meeting room as the meeting room because this is just library, but all the libraries close at 6. So we have to explore other options. And the second day, probably we will have a meeting with the board, with the Cornfield board policy officials. And then I think the TCC members are welcoming as well. All of our committee members are welcoming. So we already, we're going through this. So make sure, that we will be eligible for federal dollars. So I always say there are only two requirements before any of us receive federal dollars. One is the Cornfield gets certified. And the, another one is we need to have a physically constrained, long range transportation plan. So those are actually two requirements. So just want to let you know, if you want to review this, you're welcome, all the materials, but you're already involved, but I would say probably we will, when the site visit is here, we will extend our invitations to all of you.
Thanks so much. Up next, the Title VI plan update. Oh, sorry. Were there any questions on the federal certification review? All right. Up next, the Title VI plan update.
Okay. So the Title VI plan is a required planning document for the core MPO, and it's our non-discrimination plan. So this plan is updated periodically, specifically every 3 years, and the last update was in 2021. So now we are kicking off a new update that will be completed in fall of 2024. So some important dates within this process is the project start date. So we're officially kicking off today because we're coming to the end of the 2050 MTP process. So now we have some time to start jumping into the Title VI plan update. We also have to have a 45-day public comment period as well. So we're aiming to have that September 3rd to October 18th, 2024. And then we are aiming to have an official adoption date on Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024. So it'll be a pretty quick update process, and we will be working really closely with the TPAC, which is our Transportation Equity and Public Involvement Advisory Committee, to get this process done. And if you would like more information on this plan and its structure, I've linked the 2021 updated version right here. Any questions?
Thank you, Asia. Mm-hmm. Participation plan update is up next.
Okay, so the participation plan is also going through a pretty quick update. So the participation plan describes the strategies and techniques that the core MPO uses to inform and engage the public in transportation-related issues, and that's to maximize public participation and effectiveness. So this is another required MPO planning document, and we use it to create methods to engage the public and then also inform some of our other plans. So, for example, in the 2050 MTP process, we've been really paying attention to how effective some of our public involvement has been, and so we'll use that to directly feed into this plan update. So going out to parks and stuff seemed really, really great, whereas other methods, such as social media, we didn't get a lot of hits on that, so we will make a note of that in the plan, for example. So the previous update was in 2021, so we are updating it again. It's on the same timeline as the Title VI plan, so project start date is in August today, with a 45-day public comment period from September 3rd to October 18th, and then an adoption date on Wednesday, October 23rd at the Core MPO board meeting. And then a link to the plan is provided here. Are there any questions?
Thank you. And then the non-motorized transportation plan.
Okay, so our non-motorized transportation plan is our plan that addresses bike and pedestrian infrastructure within the core MPO planning area. The goal of this plan is to the goal of this plan update is to identify new projects, assess the needs of the community, and set new goals for bike and pedestrian infrastructure. So we are jumping back into updating this plan. So it kind of took a back seat when the 2050 plan was going through. But we are starting it again, and we're hoping to get it adopted by the end of this year. So we will be working very closely with the Bike and Pedestrian Advisory Committee in this update process and kind of putting all the pieces that we have together. So we have some chapters written, we have some projects identified, and we've drafted a project scoring and ranking methodology. And so now working with the Bike and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, we're going to look through all of that and put the plan together and hopefully get it finished this year. Are there any questions on that?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, status report. We have a project update on the State Route 204 corridor study. We have Tommy Crochet and Josh Sofsky with VHB here with us today.
Thank you for listening to us and giving y'all, as we give y'all an update on this study. Get to that. All right, so we're going to kind of quickly go through this presentation. We're going to lay out kind of what we've seen in the corridor, what we understand the issues are. And we've been developing in conjunction with our planning partners, the county, City of Savannah, and GDOT, primarily to develop some both short-term and long-term alternatives for the project. And we'll kind of give you a quick overview of that and show you a matrix comparing those as well, and then talk about next steps. What we're leading up to is we're holding this as we're planning to set up a public information open house either mid, late September, early October at the latest. So we'll get to that. Quick background. We know there's congestion out there. Anyone who's ridden on this corridor knows there's congestion, especially in the AM and peak periods through here. There are significant crashes along here, and we'll kind of talk about it a little bit. And then what are we trying to do? We're simply trying to relieve congestion and do our best to reduce crash frequency and severity. Along the State Route 204 corridor, where our study is limited to looking at from US 17 through the King George Boulevard interchange, with a strong focus both on the Ford Avenue intersection, where there is an unsignalized median opening on State Route 204, as well as the Pine Grove Drive intersection that currently operates with a traffic signal. Volumes along the corridor, focusing in this area. Currently, we've got about 50,000 vehicles a day traveling this corridor. Truck percentages in peak periods are 15 to 22% across the board. As we look at a potential opening year for a short-term project, we're expecting that traffic to get up to about 62,000, but looking at our design year horizon to 2050, we're approaching 75,000 vehicles a day. For a typical freeway situation, 60,000 vehicles a day is about your capacity for a two-lane freeway. If you look to wind it to six lanes, then you'd be looking at a capacity of about 90,000 ADT. So that's, keep that in mind. Crashes, kind of hot spots, primarily are at that Pine Grove signalized intersection, but we do have crashes kind of smattered out through there, several at the Ford Avenue intersection. I think you've got a lot of rear ends because of the congestion in this corridor as well. And then the other hot spots are down along at the intersections on King George Boulevard and at the ramp intersections with US 17. crash rates, we are showing a comparison of crash rates as well as for total crashes and injury crashes. The rates compared to arterial roadway state, you know, the statewide average, crash rates on 204 are below that. However, since portions of the corridor are operating as a freeway, when you compare it to the freeway average, those rates, both the injury and total crashes, are about double what the rates would be expected for on a freeway. And in that sense, you know, knowing that operations on a freeway are more free-flowing without the interruption of traffic signals or other types of intersection control, those lower crash rates could be expected if we were to convert the arterial, signalized arterial portion of the corridor to a freeway. I'm going to let Josh go ahead and kind of run through the alternatives we've developed fairly quickly on this project.
Sure. So right now we're looking at a schematic of what the roadway and the intersections look like right now. And we're first going to compare it to as if we don't do anything for this roadway. So if we look 6 years in the future in the open year, we're looking at levels of service A through F, A where things are moving freely, D where you're at capacity, and F where you're over capacity and you're sitting through multiple signal cycles. If we look along 204, you'll see at Ford Ave, we're at a level of service F in the morning and C in the afternoon. And on Pine Grove, F in the morning and E in the afternoon. If we go forward 20 years after that to 2050, we're fully failing along 204, where we still have F in the morning and C in the afternoon at Ford Ave, but at the signalized intersection, we're having F morning and evening rush hours. So let's look at some of the improvements we're considering for 204. First, you know, as Tommy mentioned, with the increased traffic, we would look at widening State Route 204 from four lanes to six lanes, and that'll provide capacity for the, you know, increasing traffic. We'll also look at improving the off-ramp, especially the 204 westbound off-ramp. Providing a longer deceleration lane and widening the two lanes there will give us some additional capacity to store vehicles and keep traffic from spilling back onto 204. We're also looking at closing medians both at Ford Ave and Pine Grove Drive. These will provide some operational and safety improvements at those locations. Also, we're looking at adding some mini on-ramps and off-ramps at those two intersections. That'll include some long deceleration lanes and acceleration lanes. That'll really increase safety and provide space away from through traffic for cars to slow down and speed up. To account for potential median closings, we're looking at adding a free-flowing U-turn at US 17, and this will allow traffic, who are coming out of one of those areas with closed medians to make a free-flowing U-turn instead of going through the signalized intersections at US 17. Finally, we're also looking at adding an interchange at Pine Grove Drive. So we're going to start off and look at some short-term alternatives. These are alternatives that we can do within the next 5 or 6 years and are less expensive than some of the long-term options. First, this we call this alternate A. We would be widening State Route 204 with a median at Ford Ave. So we would close the median there, but we would still leave the signal at Pine Grove Drive. So moving on to alternative B, in this case, we don't widen, but we would improve the off-ramp here. This is the westbound off-ramp to US 17. Within our modeling, we found that improving that off-ramp provides so much benefit to State Route 204 westbound that we're going to include that in all of our alternatives. But in this alternative, we would also add a median at both the Ford Ave and Pine Grove Drive intersections. In this alternative, vehicles wishing to turn left both, you know, from Pine Grove or Ford Ave or onto would either have to go through this interchange here at King George Boulevard, showing this path shown in orange, or through the interchange at US 17. So because of those movements, we added a third alternative, C, where we're doing the same thing, closing these medians, but we're also adding a U-turn here at US 17. And as you can see in this diagram, we would take out a slope under the fourth span of this bridge, as shown here. Currently, it's a steep slope from top of the bridge, and provide enough space for a single lane of traffic to complete that U-turn free-flowing, along with some deceleration lanes and acceleration lanes, so that we can really speed up that process for that traffic making that U-turn. So let's look at these three short-term alternatives. We went ahead and came up with some comparisons for that. First, we're looking at safety. With alternate A, we would have a low safety benefit compared to a medium safety benefit with B and C. The main reason for that is because closing the Ford Ave intersection with B and C really reduces some of those crossing conflicts and other conflicts with those intersections. And we also looked at traffic operations and delay. Overall, with these, with A, we would have a medium reduction in delay due to that widening. And with B and C, we would have a smaller reduction since we're not widening, but eliminating those signals does provide a reduction in delay along 204. I wanted to point out here for both Ford Ave and Pine Grove, we looked at the difference in their travel time, what that would be compared with what traffic would be like in 2030. So for Ford Ave, where, they would have to make left turns, they would have to make right turns and do a U-turn to get to their neighborhood if they're coming from the opposite direction. We're looking at a medium increase in travel time in alternate A, a large increase in alternate B because there's no other improvements, and a medium increase in alternate C. Keep in mind that they're also getting the benefit of improvements on 204, whether it's the improvements of the widening in Alt A or the improvements, of that U-turn in Alt C. Same for Pine Grove. They'll have a small reduction in their travel time with Alt A where they still have a signal, but we do widen the roadway. And with Alt B, they would have a large increase in their travel time, and Alt C having that U-turn, they'd have a medium increase. So environmental and community impacts for these alternatives is relatively small. We'll have some impacts with the widening, but overall, relatively small impacts. Costs, we're looking at $30 million for Alt A, $4.5 million with Alt B, and $9.7 million with Alt C. And I guess, do you guys have any questions about these alternatives at this point? We'll go on to long-term. Okay. So let's look at, we have three long-term alternatives as well, starting with Alt-J. And this essentially is a combination of our three short-term alternatives, where we're going to do the widening, we'll have the U-turn, and we'll close both medians. The next alternative is Alt-K, which is similar to the previous one, but we're also adding in these mini off-ramps with long deceleration and acceleration lanes. This really improves the safety and the operations at these intersections. And you'll notice that, we do have the U-turns here as well. And we're also needing to replace or widen the bridges over the canal and over one of the railroads. And that does add to the cost of this alternative. So moving on to alternate L, in this one, we're going to widen the roadway and also propose an intersection here at Pine Grove Drive, sorry, an interchange at Pine Grove Drive. So this interchange would have some loop ramps on the north and normal diamond ramps on the south with a roundabout at each end. And we'd be constructing a bridge over Pine Grove Drive to really provide better access to and from both directions on 204. And this would require replacing or widening the bridges over the CSX railroads and constructing a new bridge on Pine Grove Drive. So let's look at a comparison of this. We're definitely increasing our safety benefit, with closing both medians and with some of these improvements to the intersections and the roadway overall. We'd be looking at medium benefit with Alt-J and a high benefit with Alt-K and L for safety. Traffic operations, we're getting a large reduction in overall delay with these alternatives. On Ford Ave, we would have a small increase. keep in mind that they're having to make, still make the U-turns, but with the major improvements we're making to 204, their overall travel time on 204 will go down, even with that increased travel time. And on Pine Grove, they would have a small increase in travel time with Alt-J, and then a small reduction with Alt-K, and where they have their own interchange there, they would have a large reduction in travel time. Environmental impacts and community impacts would be higher with these alternatives. With alternate L, we'd be constructing a interchange which may impact a nursery on the north side, and we would have larger impacts to some of the wetlands along the roadway, and we would also have some larger impacts to the adjacent properties. And the costs for these are higher, especially with some of the bridge replacements. We're looking at $36 million for the first alternative, with $58 million for the widening with the intersection improvements, and $96 million for the interchange project. So we also looked at some alternatives that we evaluated and decided not to move forward with. We're happy to answer your questions about that.
All right, so real quick, our kind of timeline here, we're here in the summer. We have kind of completed our initial evaluation at the schematic level. We're presenting to y'all, we're having conversations with some key stakeholders, especially emergency services, since there are, Chatham County has a fire station on Ford Avenue and City of Savannah has one off of Pine Grove. We want to take this to the public. We just wanted to make sure we briefed y'all and some of these key stakeholders before we solicited input from the public. We very much understand, especially the residents who live and work along Ford Avenue and Pine Grove Drive back in that area. We know this will affect them. This would change some of their travel patterns with most of these alternatives. But the overall safety benefit both to them and the through traveling public along the roadway would offset, hopefully those, some of those inconveniences they may have. Once we have that public meeting, we would see if we need any additional stakeholder meetings, maybe have some more one-on-ones with homeowner associations in the area. We'll begin preparing more detailed conceptual plans of the alternatives that the study team, including our partners with the county, the city, and GDOT, of which alternatives we want to study in more detail and take forward to another level of comparison. In doing so, we hope to come back next spring, brief y'all again. We're targeting March on the progress on that, have another public meeting to solicit input, provide information, and then look to finalize recommendations next summer. That, I think that's all we have. Any questions?
Yes, sir.
So in your alternatives of J, K, and L, do you have any predictions about how long those improvements would last based on, your 2050 numbers and things like that?
I think, from that perspective, all of those would last well past the, say a 2050, 2060 design year. Knowing development in this area, it's not going to grow, dramatically. I actually did a study under contract with GDOT back in 2005 to 2008, where we ended up coming out of that study, the recommendation was couldn't afford to add capacity to the 204 corridor at the time. So we came up with fixing the bottleneck at King George Boulevard with an interchange, fixing a bottleneck at Rio Road with an intersection improvement there. All the time where we're designing the interchange, we knew that eventually the Pine Grove Road would become a bottleneck. And we did a few things there that will help facilitate some of these improvements that we're proposing here. But we feel that those improvements should last beyond that 2050, 2060 kind of design horizon.
Any other questions?
Just so you know, Chatham Area Transit, historically there had been an express route along this corridor. It's no longer operating now, but that is identified in our medium and long-term plans to reestablish that. So I noticed there was no mention of transit in this study. So there is planning in within your planning horizon to reestablish the express route.
And we definitely can include that in some of the descriptions of these proposed projects. As we get to look at the longer term or any of the widening alternatives, I would suggest that we consider making sure, seeing if we can get the shoulders wide enough, that could possibly convert it to bus shoulders, in operations, at least be prepared to go to that once congestion comes back in for whatever reason on the corridor, if congestion comes back in. But that's kind of the hope is if let's get rid of the congestion, then your buses will have everything they need at least for a while.
Thank you. I appreciate the consideration.
Hey, similarly to the transit inclusion, there's no mention of pedestrian or bicycle access. There currently is a crosswalk across Pine Grove, although it doesn't connect to anything, but there are a number of crashes involving pedestrians, including a fatality in the study area. So I was just wondering if that was going to be included or thought of at any point. I've received multiple concerns and comments from residents who live in Georgetown who want to be able to get to Savannah and can't because there's no way for them to get there by bike or walking. And similarly, accessing public transportation wouldn't be safe or possible without that inclusion.
We would definitely consider it. However, you know, as most of this is operating as a freeway, and we have to work within the terms of is it a safe place to direct pedestrians or cyclists on there. And, you know, working within GDOT's kind of policies on that front, we would take a look at this. Similarly, 15 years ago, we did the same thing. And basically, if we can find a way to fund a separated, you know, shared use facility, that would be great to put it towards the back edge of the right of way along here, possible. But you're also talking about, you know, pretty good expense and potential fairly strong impacts to marshes and other things to add that in this corridor. So I don't want to just give you lip service and say, oh yeah, we can include a path along here. It would be a very challenging project to make that happen, but to direct cyclists and pedestrians to ride in the shoulder of a freeway is really not typically responsible way to direct
things. Yeah, that's definitely not, but we know that because that is the only access point that will happen.
Yes.
So just making sure that we're considering that when we're looking at those recommendations. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all so much for giving us that presentation on today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we are moving into our information reports, but also note that there is a meeting at 4, so we'll try to be a little quick going through these. I'm super excited to have Katie here in person for the GDOT project status update.
Thanks. Okay, for pre-construction status is 19219 is the alternate delivery.
Hey, Katie, yeah? Could you speak more into the microphone?
Sure.
Yes.
Is that better? So 15151 is a safety improvements project. The next milestone is PFPR. 15675 is the I-16 exit bound ramp. We're still holding let. 15704 and 705 is the twin projects, and they're moving toward PFPR. And that's the same status on down for Bull River, Lazaretta Creek, and Hodgeville Road. And then for the active status, we have all the projects are progressing. And I know Savannah River 13741 opened to traffic recently in July.
Any questions?
Any questions? All right. Thank you so much, Katie. Up next for Chatham County, I don't have any particular updates. Please let me know if you have any questions on any of the Chatham County projects. Thank you. Up next, City of Savannah.
And out in the effort to expedite, I will just hit the high points. For Project Marin, we received the updated public involvement plan. It is under review by GDOT, and then we'll go to Federal Highway. DeLesseps is about 27% complete. Sidewalk installation's begun, and the City Council approved funding to expand the drainage and water and sewer project work. Truman Linear Trail Phase 2B had its groundbreaking on July 1st, and construction contract has been executed. Pre-con meetings are scheduled in August. Tied to town, Middle Ground Road, city's in fee negotiations with the proposer and anticipating NTP in September. The I-16 ramp removal was in Wacota talked about that earlier. So scoping phase will add an updated IMR and is forecasted to be complete in 2026.
Thank you so much. Any questions for Michelle? All right. Savannah Hilton Head International Airport.
Yeah, we have four active construction projects at the moment. Our security checkpoint expansion, our fuel storage facility expansion. We are constructing about 1,000 auxiliary parking lots on the south side of the airport. We're going to possibly hit the larger spot. The 650 lot spot is going to be open before Thanksgiving, and the smaller lot is going to be open before Christmas. And then we are building, we just started building an air cargo facility on the north side of the airport with a construction completion date of March 2026.
Thank you so much. Any questions for Keith? Chatham Area Transit.
So for the ferry maintenance facility, we are wrapping up the permitting on that and hope to have those issued soon so we can do the bid for that. And the dock itself, which is the Plant Riverside Dock, we are awaiting issuance of the award. The pair maintenance facility, we are finalizing our site selection process, and we are still doing some community outreach throughout the month of August, so we'll be actually attending community meetings to discuss that project. I have added the electric bus replacement project here, which we added to the TIP in the MTP, so we will be tracking that as well in the other projects if you have any questions on those.
Great. And then are there any update from LATS? All right. That is attached for your review. Are there any other comments? Thank you all so much for your participation today with the TCC. Our next meeting will be October 17th.